supposed to say again?
What kind of podcast is this?
Oh, this is Bad Play Style. We're a video game book club podcast wherein we talk about the video game we played this week.
NSFW?
Yeah, we swear a lot. And we're going to fucking spoil the shit out of this game.
Yeah, I was going to say, what about secrets?
Yeah, we're going to ruin all the secrets.
Such as?
Such as, Bastil is really your mom.
I said dad.
Doesn't matter.
Sit down, take a chair. I just put on the tea. We're going to have an episode of Bad Play Style. I'm Owen.
What kind of tea we got? My name is Matt.
We have no tea.
Damn it.
My name is SJW Snowflake Argumentative.
AKA. BKA.
Is this my real name or the other title?
What is your name?
Kanan.
Okay, yeah.
Kanan. I was like, wait, do I have to do the other one? We're almost to the point where the new one's gone, right?
Yeah, it's almost like exactly a month from now.
Cool.
So, why did you do that?
Why did I do? Oh, because of the chicken hat, which is our checks and balances measure to ensure that everyone is participating in the game and not playing it.
Named after a feature
in Metal Gear Solid 5. If you lose at a given point too many times, they offer to give you the chicken hat, and it is a ridiculous chicken hat you put on your head, and then you are invisible.
Yeah, it makes the game easier.
It makes the game way easier.
It never helps with the part that's actually hard.
Yeah, no, you still gotta, like, yeah. Still gotta fight those dudes with the armor and the bullshit. Mm-hmm.
The skull unit.
Yeah, fuck those dudes.
Welcome to our show.
Hi.
We are Bad Play Style. We already warned you about spoilers, but we didn't warn you about all the books we're going to read. wait, but they're not books, they're video games. I'm sorry if that
books.
Was confusing.
Oh, yeah,
I've read several books in my time, and that's a book, I can tell from the jaggies. So, what do we play this time, guys?
We played Fallout 2, a post-nuclear role-playing game.
Okay.
Slash the mod.
Yeah, the Fallout 2 Restoration Project.
Yeah.
Why the hell did we do that?
Because it's a really good game.
Hell yeah, it is.
Hell yeah.
And when it works. There's like a little bit more of that game than there used to be.
Yeah, which was neat.
Yeah.
We should get into that later.
Yeah, so first things first, we like to warm up with a little ditty called "Hey Kenan, what have you been playing lately?"
That's not the name of the segment. I've been playing a lot of PUBG on stream. That's been good. I've been playing.
You're affiliated with like a street gang now, right?
I'm Twitch street gang affiliated.
They initiated him.
I got jumped in.
He made his bones.
Yeah, I got jumped in. Blood in, blood out.
He's got that purple crown on his chest with the gothic letters.
They asked for my address. I'm worried about Twitch merch showing up now.
You had to like kill an Azubu guy, right?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, right. I think I stole a minivan too. I think that was part of the process.
And now you're like officially allowed to stand on the corner and yell about video games.
Yep.
Right?
Right. Yeah, I have subscribe button now. I am personally top tier subscribed to my channel automatically, which I thought was silly.
Yeah, you get all the emojis.
Yep, I get all the not emojis that are there.
So, what do you get per subscriber?
So, the going rate initially is 50%. So, like, they subscribe $5, I get 250.
Okay.
Which is actually, like, not bad, right? Like, if you have 100 subs, that's $250. Like, that's cool.
Yeah, that's all
right. If you're like a super high tier contributor, you know, if you're Ninja or Choco Taco or whatever, they tend to
Say their names.
Yeah, don't
sorry, that gives them power.
Don't speak them yet.
Do not say E-Boy's names in my presence.
Wait. What if, as an ongoing rule on this podcast, whenever
is it just generic streamer? A streamer?
No, a Twitch streamer of prominence comes into conversation. We want to talk about it in the news. We use a made-up different name that sounds like it might be a real streamer.
Frozen Snickers Bar.
Yeah, like Neon Tiger.
Yeah.
So when Neon Tiger had a heated gaming moment and used a racial slur again.
So, yeah.
Remember, kids, don't look up to these people. They're awful.
Yeah, everyone on the internet is awful, self-included. I like wrestling.
You know, Ric Flair, the mainframe.
So what do the big names like Neon Tiger get?
They get, like, the ratio tends to shift for higher trafficked people. I've heard 70-30.
Okay. But, they get 70?
They get 70.
Wow.
But, like, Twitch/Amazon is totally happy to rake in the 30% on your 2 million subscribers, you know, like...
Yeah.
We pay for service base, you give us free content.
And then, the other thing that affiliates get is, like...
Emojis, I heard it was emojis.
I think I need to... But the other thing is you get, like, a cut of anything that's bought from the Twitch store from your account.
Okay, so...
While I'm playing a game, they have to, like, buy this game.
So if they buy PUBG, basically.
If someone buys... Yeah, currently, that's pretty much all I play online,
And anyone who's watching you play PUBG probably also...
Probably already owns PUBG, and then, I guess, like, I don't know much about bits in Twitch culture, but apparently you get 1 cent per bit that is used to cheer your channel on, which is, like, another way they've monetized... things.
The gamification of things I don't use is always just bewildering.
Yeah, it's... So, like, the way bits end up working in most cases is, like, when you're watching, like, LOL finals or whatever, they'll, like, have rewards for people who give them bits. Which is silly, because they generated an art thing to take your cents. But whatever. That's America.
Cool.
Commerce.
Well, congratulations on being anointed as a Twitcher.
Yeah, I guess. Real twitchy.
A twitching one.
And then the other thing
that sounds eldritch.
Yeah, completely derailed. I'm very tired today. I'm sorry if I'm a little spacey. But, and then last night, part of why I'm very tired is I got home from a local wrestling show at midnight and decided I was going to try out a game. So I installed it and played a little bit of Jurassic World Evolution, which is a Jurassic Park park manager game.
That game looks cool.
It's kind of neat.
Prepare for that to be a pick.
I'm probably picking that later.
Okay.
That's I wanted to like test drive it. I haven't gotten a carnivore yet. That's the thing I'm going to do later.
Sure.
Let's get a carnivorous dinosaur and see what kind of shit we can get into.
I've had for a long time to play. Like, I looked at, what was that, that new roller coaster game that's not from Roller Coaster Tycoon, but it's basically that. Planet Coaster.
Yeah.
Like, I watched a video of someone playing that. I was like, man, I haven't played one of these in forever. That looks great.
Yeah, so, like, that's the core of that game.
Yeah.
But then it's just like, yo, we threw Jurassic Park instead of Roller Coasters in.
It's got Jeff Goldblum voiceover, doesn't
it? Oh, tons of it. Yeah.
Which is pretty great.
Yeah. He's very Ian Malcolm. It's very good so far.
I'm a big fan of The Fly.
He's really like, yeah, this isn't going to go bad at all the whole time, and it's pretty great. I'm really excited for him to talk shit when a carnivorous monster eats people. Like, it's going to be good. But yeah, we'll talk more about that later. I haven't played a lot of other things.
What'd you play, Matt?
Well, so at school, we've been playing a lot of Ultimate Chicken Horse. That seems to be the game that the kids have latched onto the most.
Well, they keep adding stuff.
Well,
like, there's new levels.
We unlocked all the levels, and two that stand out to me is Dance Party, where at any given time, 50% of the level is shrouded in darkness, and the other half is strobe lit. And these aren't like half the screen and half the screen. It's like there's a pattern. And the pattern goes black, and then it's a different pattern.
Like it's coming off a disco ball
or something. Yeah, but the pattern changes, and then also
that really fucks up like your control of locomotion, doesn't it?
You kind of, it makes you take all of the jumps on faith and on feel, like a pilot flying a plane without radar.
Cool.
Right? And so, it leads to some interesting moments, especially when someone's like putting the pressure on you, like you know they can do it, you want to do it before them.
Right.
We also discovered how to change the rules, so we changed it to be a lot more kid-friendly. So, like, there's a lot more things that we changed to score every single time, but I generally lowered score values so the games take longer, so we have more time to make the level fucked up and hard.
Sure.
And then another level we discovered is the mainframe or the motherboard. Basically, it's an enormous pit, and there's two alcoves, one on either side, and one contains the entrance and one contains the exit, and there are these two enormous green boards hanging over the pit that take up, like, most of the level, vertically and horizontally, and any individual, like, they're divided into this grid, and any individual square you stand on becomes impassable next round.
Okay.
So, like, the path has to change.
So you literally have to take a different path every single time.
Okay.
And if you're jumping a lot, there's these huge, like, McDonald's arches that become impassable terrain now.
Nice.
And then
getting under them.
Or... One of the things they added in one of the expansions was blocks that crumble if you touch them 3 times and they're gone permanently. Mm-hmm. They made an entire bridge out of these levels. So okay. As you play the level, the bridge falling starts apart. Falling apart.
That's cool.
Right?
Yeah, because in the base game, they had blocks that would break if you stepped on them once.
Yeah.
But that's good.
I like that there's, like, content being added to that game still.
Yeah.
Because that game's kind of old, like, 3-4 years?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Maybe Chicken Horse was... yeah.
I think it came out on Switch, so it might be that they're trying to punch up the game a little bit for the Switch release and add a bunch of stuff. I've noticed, like, usually when pre-established indie games come to Switch, they usually try and, like...
Here's a little more!
Yeah, put a...
Here's
put
a reason to buy on the Switch!
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I have unlocked all the characters and most of the costumes, and I gotta say that I cannot decide. The chameleon can wear a Hawaiian shirt and, like, aviator goggles, but then he also could, instead of the Hawaiian shirt, wear, like, a blanket tied around his neck, like a cape, and I honestly can't decide which one I like more.
So those are both PUBG acceptable.
And then the monkey has a Letterman jacket that he can put on, which is just aces, right? But then he also has an enormous chef hat that he can put on. That basically, like, doubles his character size.
Okay.
Not his hurt box, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, his little picture.
His visual.
And then the elephant gets exercise gear, like, 80s spandex exercise gear.
Yeah, does he have, like, wristbands?
Wristbands, and then there's a sweatband for his head. Yeah,
that's good. And when you said that, I first imagined the elephant in a tracksuit, which I could go for that, too.
That's not quite what's going on. And then the elephant can, instead of having the sweatband on their head, can have one of those birds that cleans elephants just hanging out on the back of its head.
That's cool.
Those are good birds.
Yeah. What else have you been playing?
I played some Warframe, because a new expansion came out, and it's enormous, and it's way better than the last one. And I've been catching lots of robotic fish. I really like fishing in that game. It's really relaxing and fun. Just hanging out with my friends on Discord, catching massive amounts of robotic fish. It's really fun.
Nice.
And the fish are like mats for the gear grind,
for,
right?
For making... Yeah, they added... So last expansion, they added customizable swords. Like, you could take the parts, mash them together, make the sword you want. Now they added pistols, so you can make the pistol you want.
I see where this is going.
So if they made, like, Tano Fishing Simulator 2218, like... You'd be on that.
No, I think it's the fact that I remember we were talking about this a few years ago about how one of the things that's really great about World of Warcraft is that you can keep playing World of Warcraft in like 8 different ways.
Sure.
Right. So like I'm still playing Warframe, which I want to do, but I'm not engaged in like the high intensity gameplay that it's like, normally known for. Right. And I'm still working towards
gaining
like, making that better.
Yeah.
Right. And I think if it was just straight fishing, I would have zero interest. But the fact that it sort of bolsters my ability to engage in the other parts of the game is really, really engaging.
They've also done, like, the presentation of how fishing works in that game is really cool.
Yeah.
Like, the water effects are all really nice. Throwing the spearfish stuff is fun.
So you know, like, how Ivara can make, like, ninja wires that go between two locations, and you can ninja style, like, jump on them with 2 feet and, like, run across them?
Yeah.
So I've been doing that across ponds. So I shoot a dash wire, like, an inch above the top of the pond, and just run along the top of it and go, you're a fish.
Yeah. And you're not, like, actually disturbing them.
Right. Because, if you step in the water, the fish go, wah! And they, like, go faster.
That's pretty good.
To hit them. I've been doing that. And then I bought Divinity 2 because a coupon appeared in my Steam inventory, and I really want to play that with my friends here on co-op. I'm really excited to play that game.
I feel like we're going to generate a lot of hashtag content, if not this year, next year.
I want to play a Skellaman. And I want to
What if
be...
we did co-op and we all made Skelly Mans?
That would be...
I mean, there's a bunch of other racial options that are rad in that game.
That would be difficult for us, I think, but...
Yeah, but you so rarely get to be undead.
That's true.
Like
being a Skelly Man is in my...
When I say undead, I don't mean like a fucking vampire. I mean like undead.
Yeah. I want to be a fucking skeleton with no tendons.
Normally when a video game or an RPG is like, you get to be undead, you get to be like... a guy who's dead. You don't get to be a fucking skeleton.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, I'll always love Age of Wonders for letting you just roll as a skeleton.
Yeah. So the guy that you get to... So what's cool about Divinity is that it comes with, like, a couple pre-made like backstories for your character, and you can sort of change the stats of that character, but you come with a pre-built backstory, like, but there's like five of them, so it's sort of like what Dragon Age 2 tried to do, but it actually works instead of just being worse.
Savage Burn.
Objectively.
Okay.
But yeah, so the undead guy, he sort of woke up and he doesn't know, he has amnesia. He's a dead guy.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So.
Great.
And he doesn't heal from healing magic. He heals from poison.
So I was reading about this game, and apparently only one of you gets to become a god, which is what the whole game is about.
If you were playing co-op, only one of you gets to receive the ending of the game. So.
I kind of like that in the context of us playing it.
It's better than Baldur's Gate 2, because Baldur's Gate 2 is also a CRPG about potentially becoming a god.
Right.
And in that, the way, if you play that multiplayer, if you play it co-op, it's written really ambiguously as to who the fuck they're even talking about when they refer to the ball spawn. Is like, is it one of us? Is it both of us?
Is it all of us? You talking about mints too?
Yeah.
Boo. It's actually just boo.
So it's very clear they're talking about the ball spawn.
Yeah.
But ball spawn is a plural and singular word. And they're both your characters are, I believe, count as ball spawn. So like,
yeah.
Mutual rule.
It's like how in Halo Combat Evolved there was two Spartans, but they're both Master Chief.
Yeah, and one's like blue. They like did a color tint, I remember. Yeah.
Everybody fucking casting Halo. Simulacrum all over the place. Mm-hmm. And dudes out of salt water. Blah, 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 blah.
Owen, what did you play?
Yep. That's what I said.
I played a ton of RimWorld. I finally beat RimWorld.
Oh, I did play some RimWorld.
Yeah. You beat it?
Yeah.
You made this spaceship?
I made a big spaceship, and I put 22 people in it. And when you do that, it takes a month for it to charge up. And I think what's supposed to happen if you play on not baby mode is, like, that's when, like, people come out to steal your ship or whatever.
Right, they
or
heard about a spaceship. Yeah.
Yeah. And I switched on the ship. I put everyone in it not realizing it needed a month to charge. And I put everyone in, and I flicked it on, and I was like, okay, it'll be ready to go in 30 days. It's like, all right, man. Yeah, I turned on time accelerator. Fucking nothing happened. Ship took off, and you get to listen to nice guitar music.
That's nice.
And I started another RimWorld game with the intention of wiping every town off the map that's near me.
Like, he's just going full raider.
Yeah, we're going to be marauders.
Okay.
Yeah. But we want to kind of tech up to it first. Like, we want to be confident in our ability to just roll into a town and kill everyone.
So using fun things like grenade launchers.
Yeah. I haven't settled on what our arsenal is going to look like, but we're dug into a super defensive position inside a mountain.
Yeah, you said you started doing your settlements inside mountains, which, from what you explained, sounds super great.
Yeah, and it's a super pain in the ass at the same time, because to make a 10 by 10 room, you don't have to make, instead of 40 construction jobs of wall segments, it's 100 construction jobs to clear the room, and then 100 more construction jobs to either, like, smooth the floors or install floors to make it, like,
it's a lot longer.
Like, people hate living in, like, raw-ass caverns.
Also, you can't run power cable unless you smooth the stone out.
Yeah, or have installed floor.
Yeah. So you have to, like, if you want to run your cables through the walls,
yeah,
you have to smooth every wall you want the cable to go through.
Yeah, that part kind of
sucks.
Or
just have cable out, and then they're mad about it.
But the great part is you don't have to heat the thing for shit.
Yeah.
Because I've been using wood-fired generators in that game, which just make heat exudes from them. And if you have them indoors and have your vents set up properly, you don't have to build a single heater. They warm the whole base. And in fact, the base gets a little too hot in the summer, so I have to have...
Good chunk.
Yeah. So I have to have a separate set of vents that I open and close and just blow all the wood furnace heat just outside. So, because, like, it gets to be, like, 160 degrees in the furnace room in the summer if I don't do that. And, like, people will go in to refill the furnace with logs and just fall
die.
Over and have a heat stroke.
Yeah. The heat tolerance after about 110, not great in that game.
It's bad. Especially, like, some of the older, weaker, more feeble colonists.
So who's going to be doing your hauling, right?
Yeah. Because actually, probably not, because the older colonists tend to have, like, a lot of developmental
skills. Yeah.
Like, they're usually chained to the research bench. But yeah, I played a ton of RimWorld, and I bought that new Pokemon game. I got Pokemon Let's Go Eevee, and it's delightful and charming, and I've never played I haven't played a handheld, or I haven't played a Pokemon game since, like, Gold and Silver, or Heart Gold and Soul Silver. Mm. So, like, this is, like, of a fidelity I'm not accustomed to my Pokemon games being.
Hey, Owen, what's your Eevee's name?
My Eevee's name is Pot Roast. He's very good. He wears sunglasses and a black hat, and he looks very tough.
He's a very tough Eevee.
He's a member of Team Rocket, isn't he?
Well, can't confirm. His clothes are Team Rocket, like, on the Team Rocket, like, clothing label.
Yeah, no, his clothes are Team Rocket the way my eventual Twitch hoodie...
That's what I'm saying. He's a Team Rocket affiliate.
Yeah. Well, we beat a Team Rocket member, and she gave us Team Rocket clothes.
Here's all my merch.
Just like Kenny's gonna beat up a fruit sneaker.
Yeah. There we go. Very good. So yeah, I've been playing that, and I'm really excited for it. And I bought the stupid Pokeball controller.
You've been swinging it around.
Yeah, I've been fiddling with it. This is a very unergonomic controller play with because it's small.
Oh, this is a joystick?
Yeah.
That's upsetting.
Whack.
Because the game... Well, because... So this is a remake of Red and Blue, right? It's a remake of Pokemon Yellow, which is a remake of Red and Blue. Yeah. Those games came out in the Game Boy.
Right.
That's a D-pad and two buttons.
Right.
So this controller has a joystick, and the joystick presses in for one button, and there's a button on top. And that's all there is. But it's like only like the size of a golf ball. So
wait, where's the second button? Oh, okay.
Cool. But it makes my hand hurt to use it for a long period of time.
Oh, yeah, because you can really grip in this.
There's like a death claw thing going.
Which would bother me, except that this thing also functions as a Pokemon Go Plus. You pair it to Pokemon Go, the phone game.
That's cool.
And it auto spin stops, and it vibrates, you push the button, you catch the Pokemon. Also, it works like the pedometer did in Heart Gold and Soul Silver, so I can put one of my guys from the Switch game in here and walk him around, and it gets better. So I'm.
And it's like free haircut love.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm pretty happy with it, even though I hate using it as a controller, and I'm not going to use it as a controller.
Right, but all these peripheral things it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Also, I hate that one of the buttons is the joystick pressing in, because when you have to type, you use the joystick to go to the letter you want, and then you press in the joystick, and of course, move over to the next letter by accident when you do it, and pick that letter. And because it only has two buttons, there's not, like, an easy delete.
Usability!
Yeah, so, it's on its surface, its primary function, it is terrible at, but it's a great device.
Much like the Surface.
Or the first smartphone.
Yeah.
It was a terrible phone.
So yeah, I've been playing RimWorld and Pokemon, and I don't know, that's kind of about it.
I wonder how indestructible this thing is.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be kind of sturdy, because they expect people to carry it around. And
they expect children to carry it around.
And, like, go exercising with it and shit.
Yeah. Alright. So, like, relatively mellow, like, two games each kind of show.
Sounds good.
We all play Fallout 2.
Yeah.
We didn't name that, but duh.
Yeah, it's a little redundant. And we do that enough anyway when we record these episodes.
Play Fallout 2?
No, say, and the game we're playing this week is the game we're here for. It's like, yeah, fucking of course, ding dong.
Speaking of sarcastic tones, what explain Fallout 2 to me, even though I played it when I was 9.
Fallout 2 is an open world computer RPG about rolling through the wasteland. It's a little more grim and serious than the 3D Fallouts, I'd say.
What's the primary objective of Fallout 1?
Fallout 1 is to get the water chip and save your people.
What is the primary objective of Fallout 2?
Get a different device and save your different people.
Actually, I think it's get a car.
Yeah, no, that's definitely how the first half of that game plays out. I'm tired of walking.
I love that car.
Is this like the first instance of like a car providing a purpose in a game? Like earliest?
Probably not.
What?
Like a thing being like an additional thing you can get that makes quality of life better.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't think of a counterexample.
Yeah.
But this game came out like late enough that like that's probably a thing.
Yeah, they like were 3D games when this game came out. Yeah.
Okay. Alright.
Yeah, this is like this game is the twilight of like isometric sprite games.
Oh, yeah, because like this and the Baldur's Gate games were coming out around the same time, right?
The Fallout 3 that never came out was on their first.
And it was polygonal, and yeah.
Yeah. It was the engine that was going to be used for the Black Hound, which I think was like a Baldur's Gate game that never 98. Got finished.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like later
than I think. It's like this. Yeah. PlayStations were out. Like.
Yeah. People were playing Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah, and like that F1 game that looked super dope when I was 10.
And playing Twisted Metal, speaking of cars.
Yo.
Yeah, so.
Yo.
Cars and games.
Cars and games.
Can't kill those dogs. Anyway.
All right, where do we start with this game?
Well, so the, what the Doom Agenda says, very first, is, so you already explained what Fallout 2 is to people who are somehow listening to this who don't know what Fallout 2 is. But what the fuck is wrong with Fallout 2?
Yo, okay. So Fallout 2 was already kind of buggy.
Is this when we're choosing to do this?
I'm doing this. All right. And then...
Are we at the rage segment already?
Yeah, it's no. Kind of both. So...
That was in the beginning. We passed
this. So I don't know why my computer really hates Fallout 2.
Honestly, I think you installed it wrong.
I don't know.
I think you installed it in the reverse order. Like, I told you the wrong order when you asked me. And that's what I think what the problem
was. Like, I'm done trying to solve the problem because it's solved and I beat the game. But, like, I spent, like, a week and a half off and on, which is my fault. Which is why we'll talk about something else in a little bit.
Mm-hmm. What are you talking about now?
But I ended up dragging our time on this game a little later because I literally had to take a transplant install, because you can do that with old games, from Matt's computer in our living room to my computer, because it was doing this thing where I would trigger one of nine events, and then it would tell me that it can't divide by zero at that RAM address and crash the entire game.
Right, because...
Doing, so, like, core game functions.
So
like,
that was my thing that I was thinking is that what was happening is because you installed the Restoration Project and then the patch, right? Like, that was...
I did it the other way.
You were doing the other way around? Okay, yeah. So it was then the patch, then the Restoration Project. I think the Restoration Project comes with the patch?
It does. Right. So I looked it up.
That's what I did. Okay. I did the patch and then the Restoration Project.
So. Okay. Well, so yeah, maybe my theory falls apart.
No, I did enough science to just be like, my computer hates installing it itself.
Yeah, like, so I think, like, my theory was that it's going, hey, game asset, we're doing a normal ass thing, and then game asset would be like, that's not where the game asset lives, and then the whole thing just...
Well, shit. And I still got that error anytime I would overheal in combat. So, like, if I super stimmed and only needed 30 hit points and got 40, crash. Mm. So, like, I figured out that was the only trigger I was getting now and just avoided doing it.
Okay.
But I forget every once in a while.
So, even with my install, it was still...
Yep.
Okay.
So, there's something about the way this game runs and the way my... It's probably hardware, right? It's probably my RAM, because it's giving me RAM addresses in the error. Like, there's something about my computer not liking this game, which is... more frustrating than I'm used to with Fallout 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it caused me to just give up for, like, 12 hours at a time for about a week. So I get the chicken hat this week.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's... I will do better about tech supporting my own game instead of just rage quitting. But after that, the game was great when it started working.
Yeah.
I played the first 2 hours of this game, like, four times.
Me too.
I hated it.
I've probably played the first 2 hours of this game more times than more than any other part of this game.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did. I kept vacillating, being like, do I want to do a melee build? Do I not want to do a melee build? Owen says he's doing a melee build. I kind of want to do a melee build. I always do guns.
Yeah.
So I ended up doing a melee build with Owen, which I think is a great segue to talk about where the melee build falls apart, because it for the beginning of the game it's fine. For the middle of the game.
It's bad.
It's okay.
It's a pain in the ass.
It is a pain in the ass. That is certainly true. I think you can get some good-ass damage numbers. I think that it's really annoying that the devs of this game think that knockaway is really, really good on melee weapons, when it's really not. I want to hit that guy again. I want him to be dead now.
Yeah, I don't want to burn action points needing to get to that guy to hit him again.
It seems like putting knockback on the sledge like that would be really cool if you're doing some sort of mixed build where, like, you knock him away with the sledge and then, like, shoot him with your gun or something.
Yeah, so I think there was some like, critical thinking that didn't happen at some point, or some sort of, like, envisioning of how someone would make a character in this game that just sort of doesn't really jive with what actually ends up happening, which is you choose one weapon style and you stick with it.
Yeah.
Right? So, that sucked, and then the final boss fight, I basically just didn't participate in.
I had to use the character editor to beat it, because I ran into an issue with, like, well, we can get into the Frank Hort.
Is that fight's a discussion on its own.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Oil Rig and the Frank Horrigan fight, like as a unit.
Or, well, like, so we're talking about, like, what parts were frustrating to us, so...
So for the Frank Horrigan fight, I had a scripting hitch up where I couldn't activate the counterinsurgency program, mm-hmm. that none of the computer consoles would respond after I got the president's key card. So I had to fight Frank Horgan with his turrets.
Oh.
I did too.
God.
But differently.
Yeah, and I'm doing this with a super sledge. And if you're close to the turrets, you just die.
They just do tons of damage.
Yeah, yeah. So I ended up cheating when I got to Frank Horgan. Like, I gave it, like, a good hour of, like, crashing against it.
That
was, like,
fight is very specific in the ways you can approach it.
Yeah, and I knew the whole game that fight was coming, and I had been sort of mentally preparing for it and, like, trying to prepare my character for it. And even with this melee build, like, because I couldn't activate the counterinsurgency program, like, I couldn't do it. And I've had playthroughs in the past get to him and just not be able to beat him.
Right. No, like, that's very much a reality of the way that that fight is built.
So I guess I had the best interaction with Frank Horrigan then.
Hold on.
Okay.
So I did defeat him.
All right.
And it was a very funny time.
you told me you gave yourself, like, 2 million action points?
I gave myself 200 action points.
Okay.
Where if you have a super sledge and you have the bonus rate of attack for melee, that's 2 action points per sledge swing.
Nice. That's 100 hits.
Yeah, so in one turn, you can hit Frank Horgan with a super sledge 100 times.
Yeah.
And he will not fly away from you from knockback.
Steven was telling me that he moves, like, a pixel away and then reverts back to his normal position.
How many damage points per hit were you getting?
So not super great damage, because it's also, like, probably his best resistance.
Okay.
It's just, like, plain old physical damage.
Okay.
But here's the thing. If you hit Frank Horgan with a super sledge 100 times in the space of
some
5 seconds...
Some shit's gonna break.
No, he runs away from you. He's afraid of you.
There's, like, something in the code. Like, I want to fuck this guy.
Like, well, I think every NPC has, like, a threshold where if they're at, they're like, fuck.
Yeah, or if they take so much sudden damage, at least.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, by the time my Frank Horrigan got there, he was too crippled to move.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I ended up getting the other dudes in power armor.
I speeched my way into them helping me. Yeah, you have to get Granite Squad, really.
Yeah.
Get Grant Squad, get your followers, get the turrets on your side.
So I didn't have my followers, so I had to do the squad. Oh. Like, I accidentally left them somewhere else in the base not knowing I couldn't go back.
Left them at the wrong door.
Yeah, yeah.
So I left all my followers in that room.
The Frank
like
Horgan room?
The front room, because I was like, I need to speech the whole oil rig. I can't fight all these people.
Right.
Yeah.
Or I don't want to, because it'll take forever.
I tried that. It was not good.
So I left all of them out there, and when I came back... And I activated all the turrets, and I had Granite Squad with me, and we started fighting Frank Horgan. I pull out my Ripper, because Ripper ignores 80% of armor,
mm-hmm.
And does less knockback. So I actually transitioned over to the Ripper as my primary. The Ripper and the Super Cattle Prod were my go-tos, because they do, like, different types of damage and ignore armor and stuff, and armor becomes a huge deal at the end of the game.
It does. Everyone's in it.
Yeah, yeah. So I started doing that, and then what happened was, in the first round of combat before Horrigan... even does anything, before any of the turrets even do anything, Vic goes first. And Vic takes his Gauss rifle, aims it at Goris, and blows up Goris's face. and then Sulik pulls out his super sledge and his power armor and caves in Vic's head. And then Frank Horrigan turns on Sulik and it blows up Sulik. And then Cassidy and I are like, hey, do you want to leave and let him fight the turrets and Granite Squad? And Cassidy's like, yeah, let's get out of here. I have a Pancor jackhammer, so...
I got a bad heart.
Yeah, like, let's get out of here. So me and Cassidy just leave because that happened for some fucking reason. Vic, so that's the thing, is I don't think it was a miss because Vic had to, like, turn around to shoot Goris.
Were they technically in your party?
They were not technically in my party at that point. So I think that might have had something to do with it.
Vic's got a thing against Deathclaw.
Vic hates Deathclaws, or is scared of Deathclaws, or something. So that happened.
Vic by far gains most traitorous, by the way. He's very good at shooting his friends.
He's the worm that went to the dark side.
Yep.
Yeah. Shit, I was gonna talk about it. Oh, right, Kaga. So one of the new things that can happen is there's another member of your village you can run into as a random encounter. Named Kaga.
I question its randomness.
Yeah, and he's like, well, it's a random
encounter. Very clear breakpoints where this happens.
Yeah, so he's like, I'm the actual chosen one. Fuck you, it should be me. And he tries to kill you in the waste with him and his buddies, right? So I managed to avoid this encounter for a very long time. And when I actually got this encounter, Kaga was in full power armor.
Oh, yeah. Because he has escalating
yeah,
encounters.
Yeah, he has, like,
and
tiers that he...
And all his buds were in metal armor, and he went first and got a double turn, because I was on a melee character with love perception. And he threw 3 plasma grenades at my clustered party, killing all 3 of my party members.
Hell yeah!
And leaving me with, like, half HP, and I'm just like... okay, well, I'm not accepting that as an outcome, so we're loading the game. Like,
sure.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I only got, like, Kaga's, like, first, like, three encounter types, where he shows up and just runs away. But I found out his random encounters are geographically locked.
Mm.
That, like, if you leave that top of the map by, like, the Den and Klamath yeah. and, like, MODOK...
I only ever got him when I went in that direction.
Yeah. So, like, by the time of the game where I just, like, wasn't going around there that much, like, mm-hmm. it's like, never saw Kaga again.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably out in the wasteland, like, cursing my name because he fucking hates me for some reason.
I fought him hand-to-hand. Yeah. I fought him with really low small guns.
I fought him in the streets. I fought him on the beaches.
He showed up in leather armor. Yeah. He showed up in...
He got up to full leather armor with me. Not the jacket, but like
the actual leather armor.
Football pad stuff.
I ended up fighting him in combat armor, and he had a pretty rad rifle, it seemed, because there was some good damage coming out of him, but we still just fucked his... We fucked his day up.
So,
Then he died.
I have a lot of memories of doing an unarmed build in this game on a weird rip of this game on Mac where fast shot still applied to unarmed attacks.
That's just like an old Fallout 2 thing.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
No, it's a Fallout 1 thing, so it's not supposed to be in Fallout 2. That's not supposed to be the case, was what I read online.
I think it's patched out in the unofficial patch.
In anime. I'm not sure where it's not patched in or out or whatever, but it was... It was not the way it was supposed to be. So what ended up happening is on that build, I used to break like all scripted unarmed encounters, like the boxing ring and the kung fu matches. I would kill them in the first round,
and then none of the triggers can happen.
Would break. And so this time around, I killed them in the first round by doing targeted shots to, like, the dick or the eyes or the face, and they died, but the unofficial patch or something was just like, it's fine, let's move on.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, the fight's over? Here you go.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So the dragon came at me, and I was like, dick, face, right, and he's just like, oh, I'm dead. Right.
So, but what kind of stuff in the Restoration Project, aside from Kaga, did you guys get up to?
I went to the EPA.
Oh, really?
The plants hit hard in the EPA. Well, okay, they don't hit hard. But they take shitloads of damage compared to the plants you're used to.
As the world nuts say, tree world, we go hard.
Yeah. Yeah, they have like 80 hit points each.
Yeah.
So you gotta like really fucking rip into these plants.
I heard the EPA is kind of a slog. I went once when I first heard about the Restoration Project years ago, and I never really got too deep in it.
So let me tell you about my experience with the EPA. I went to the top right of the map, and there's a whole place that's like... vats of what normally would be FEV, but in this case there's a lot of green goo on the ground.
Sure.
And there's mutant plants everywhere, and there's stairs that are locked. Mm-hmm. Like, they are shut. Presumably I have to go open them somewhere. So I go into the main building after fighting off more plants in the yard, because there's just tons of them all over the yard.
Yeah.
And I go up to the computer, and the computer's like, hey buddy, welcome to the EPA. Here's the 9 levels of this building that are here, and they're all color-coded. And I read them, and I was like, I don't want to do this, and I left.
Oh, okay.
So. Sure.
Yeah, I've heard it's kind of a slog,
and it's
a combat dungeon.
There are dark portents in the table of contents of that dungeon. Like, yeah. It's like, oh yeah, here's where the bioweapons are. I'm like, no, later. I'll do this later.
Yeah, it's supposed to be just, like, filled with, like, fucking mutant monsters. Yeah,
no,
and
like, it seemed like I would see a lot of new things.
Did you guys go to the Abbey?
Who's Abby?
Like, the Abbey. Like, the giant Abbey out in the middle of the desert.
Nope. Didn't even find it, apparently.
Oh, that's too bad. There's, the Abbey from A Canticle for Leibowitz.
Oh, cool.
Is just out in the desert, kind of near Vault City and Gecko.
Okay.
And, like, the monks there, like, have monsters in their basement for you to plunge out. It seems like... not fully fleshed out.
Yeah.
The quests there aren't, like, super robust. There's, like, one guy who lives near the Abbey who thinks the monks should knock it off and basically gives you a quest to go into their Abbey and format the hard drives on their computers. But, like, it's kind of neat. You find a copy of The Flame Deluge,
mm-hmm.
which is what the monks in that book... it's a book. A Canticle for Leibowitz is a book that this whole encounter is based on. And The Flame Deluge is what they refer to the Great Nuclear War as. I thought it was pretty neat, but if a little unfinished.
Yeah.
Sulix Village is super cool, though. Did you guys go do that?
Yeah,
I didn't go there. I went
to Sulix Village. Can you go into the cave by the beach?
I never figured out how to get into the cave.
Yeah, I didn't figure out how to do that either.
I bet that's something that was literally unfinished.
Yeah.
And, like, the restoration project just sort of like tidied it up by putting a guy in front that says you can't go in.
I did the Pig's Blood Stimpaks quest.
Oh yeah.
And I did the Ghost Lady. And I think that's it.
Can we talk about the Stimpak quest? There's something that occurred to me when I was doing this quest. Like in Fallout 3 and 4 and New Vegas, like those games are zany and loud and big, but like not quite in the way Fallout 2 is. And Fallout 2 does it in this way that you can't do in those games. Because, like, the guy who gives you that quest, his name is literally Crom. Mm-hmm. And when you examine him, it describes Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Like, in Conan.
He is Conan the Barbarian.
And he even, like if you ask him about his life, he basically describes, like, the Riders of Doom coming and destroying his village and him, like...
He literally says Riders of Doom.
Yeah. And, like... alludes to like the Riddle of Steel and shit.
Wasteland Thulsa Doom.
Yeah, that'd be pretty all right.
I'm into it.
I mean, that's just the master, right? Steel is strong, but flesh is stronger.
Yeah, the master stylistically doesn't speak to me the way Thulsa Doom does.
But anyway, like, if you put this guy in like Fallout 3 or Fallout 4, it would be ridiculous to have like Arnold Schwarzenegger, my name is Crom. Like, crush your enemies.
That's
like,
why the Tarzan guy in Fallout 4 in the Nuka-Cola segment doesn't work for me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I've never done Nuka World, so...
Yeah, in Nuka World, there's this dude you run into who's, like, raised by apes, and you can get the apes to help you out, and it's like, this perfectly fits with Fallout's aesthetic, but this doesn't work because it's fully voice-acted.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah.
Right, part of the tongue-in-cheek stuff of early Fallouts is that you don't have all this effort into it.
Yeah.
Right? Well, then it's just like, hey, what if we did this?
Well, and like, there's like a distance between you and what you're reading, so that it's not like really distracting. You know, it's like sometimes like you'll see like computers like blurp out like quotes from movies and shit like that in the game. And if it was doing that in a 3D Fallout where you're hearing voice acted lines, recite lines from Star Wars or whatever.
If Marcus continuously yelled, Chris Avellone loves you, that would be weird.
I know you have a distaste for the stupid superhero shit that they did in 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Do you think that would, like, land better if it were presented in much the same way that, like, this kind of content is presented?
Maybe. Those are, so, like, the Mechanist and the Antagonist is what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Like,
and the Silver Shroud.
Was there another one?
Yeah, and the 4. In 4, there's another one.
Great. It maybe, but, like, part of what makes Crom work in Sulik's village is that, like, his whole shtick of being from Conan the Barbarian is, like, honestly not very important to what you're doing. Mm. And it's like really just a couple pages of dialogue when you're talking
to
him.
It's not the main focus.
Yeah, whereas, like, there's no way to, like, make the Antagonist and the Mechanist and the Silver Shroud not be ridiculous superheroics.
And, like, everyone talks about them.
Yeah.
Right? Like the game pushes this on you in such a way.
Yeah, whereas, like, Crom's whole deal, his real story is about getting ripped off about Stimpaks.
Mm-hmm. Right, and you were part of that.
Yeah.
And it fits with the rest of the universe.
Yeah, exactly.
But he makes all these silly references that are totally tertiary instead of being a core thing. There's not a radio station for it. There's not...
Yeah.
There's not all of this focus in world on it.
You only see people talking about Crom, you know, and so it's just like a little one-off joke, and so you can see the joke, you can enjoy it, and then you can, like, put it behind you and move on to it.
Like, what's so rad about rad scorpions?
Yeah.
Yep.
Keep experiencing that world.
Right, things have a place in older Fallout, right? This exists here, it is a dumb joke, but it lives here. Okay. Instead of, like, everyone yelling about it.
This is kind of a non sequitur as far as what the current line of conversation is, but I need to say it before I forget about it.
Do it.
So I was listening to Daft Punk the other day in the car.
Okay.
I was listening to Alive 2007, and there was this noise that happened, and it was like, it was during the song, and it was, I'm going to do my best here, but I'm making this noise with my mouth, and it normally comes out of a fucking synthesizer, so, like, give me a break.
Okay.
All right, it goes, doo, right? Okay. And that noise happens in the soundtrack of both Fallout games.
Oh, really?
Right, it's like that. So
they, like borrowed it.
Yeah, it's from one of the those. Same sound library, or whatever. I don't know if it's, like, from the same sound, but, like, it's one of those noises in one of the atmospheric tracks where it's like, do you know what I'm talking about? Does this.
Is it the Arroyo music?
It's, I think it's part of the Arroyo music. It's like this weird, like, mid-range tone.
I kind of have an idea of what you mean. It's like,
you just reminded me of a thing though. Mm. The Abbey has its own music that is not anywhere else in Fallout.
Yeah. Mm.
So, like, sorry, like, I'm gonna.
Well, we're talking about music now. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
So, like, it was like for me, my favorite part of being in that encounter is, like, this really surreal experience of, like, hearing this music that's probably been buried for 20 years.
Yeah.
That I've never heard before that is, like, stylistically completely in line with the rest of the game.
But it's not part of this thing that we've enjoyed for most of our lives.
Yeah. It's this missing piece. It's
like, how have I never heard this before?
Yeah. Or, like, hearing Sulik say something you've never heard Sulik say before. Sulik is... I've had a longer relationship with Sulik than most people I know.
Yeah.
Right?
And then to have more of him.
And you think that relationship is codified in these very, like, finite ways, and then to hear something new 20 years on is freaky.
Yeah,
freaky.
It's weird getting all that new stuff, and at the same time, I'm sitting there saying, we'd be good with fist, spear, hammer, you know, like, like, I am literally saying some of these lines out loud with him, and then it's like, oh, new stuff, and, like, he has way more combat text, and he has way more, like...
Kenan. Yeah. What you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Like, there are things about Sulik that are in me, right? Like,
But if you do his sister's questline, like, he says new things.
That's cool.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah, the voiced line about him wanting to leave the village with you again.
Yeah.
Was like, whoa, Sulik, he's saying things I've never heard before.
Yeah. Yeah. He's no longer, like, pull the string Sulik, right?
It's like listening to an old album and there's, like, a new track on there.
Yeah, or like, Woody suddenly coming to life from a toy story.
Yeah.
And, like, speaking.
Yeah, he's no longer somebody poison the water hole the whole time.
Or there's a snake in my ionized boot.
Or it's like when an artist dies and they unearth, like, a song they recorded 20 years ago.
Yeah, and it, like, you know? It totally, like, feels like an album.
It's not just that it's in their style, it's in their style from when they were making music in 1968.
Right, like this very specific point, and you can point at it and you be like, this happened at the same time. Like,
Yeah, and so like the Crom thing feels very much like that.
Yeah,
like that style of, like, sort of, like, I don't know what else to call it, but, like, geeky referential humor to...
Yeah,
like,
there's some dude who's, like, bought Conan on VHS and loved it and put that into the game because fucking Conan rules. Yeah. Like,
Conan does rule, and in the apocalypse we should all watch it with the sound off.
Yeah, that's a fact.
God damn it. So... I really appreciated that, like, there's points in this game, like, so I had only ever gotten to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Like, for some reason, I wandered away from Fallout 2 the few times
I've
done that.
Yeah, this is one of those games from my childhood that I just apparently just kind of never finished.
Yeah, and I didn't know that. Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff that I experienced for the first time that I didn't know was in the game or wasn't. And that's where, like, when I got stuck in places, because it's an old school point and click adventure game, and I looked it up. Like, oh, what are my options here in the walkthrough? Like, I was like, oh, the submarine just wasn't in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another new zone.
Like, oh, cool. The submarine, like, and that part wasn't, like, that broad in the same way a lot of the other things are, because it's definitely him just kind of like, yeah, put that in there.
And that's, like, another one of those ones that's kind of like Sulik's village, where, like, Sulik, when you pick him up, tells you his sister's lost, and he'll join you if you agree to help him find his sister.
But you never have to do that.
Yeah, and in Fallout 2, as it was released, you can never find his sister. And so it's always, like, one of those conspicuously absent things.
Yeah.
And just, like, the Shi, when you meet them and you learn about their history and they talk about this submarine, they say it's still there. They say it still works.
Right.
But, like, you can't see it. You can't go there.
Well, and the tanker guy probably doesn't talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like...
Well, no, you still need the IFF transponder, oddly enough, in base Fallout 2.
Oh, yeah?
You still need to not get shot.
Well, because there's dialogue about there being, like, giant guns on the oil rig, so that makes sense, right? Like, yeah. So, I really liked... a lot of that later content in that game that I hadn't experienced. Like, I didn't play New Reno very deeply.
Did you spend a lot of time in Reno? This playthrough, I mean?
I spent a lot of time in Reno.
I want to say I did, but I probably didn't. Okay. Like,
there's a lot to do in New Reno.
It seems like there's a lot there.
I did everyone's quests up till the point where they're going to make me a made man.
Sure, it's where you have to pick.
Then I went and went with the rites, but only after I destroyed their still.
Oh, okay.
And only after I had sex with one of the bishop women.
Sure.
And then...
That's good to do.
And then I went into casino... Like, I went into a casino accidentally one time, and they all started attacking me, because I was a made man with the rights, and I was like, oh, we're doing this?
Yeah.
And I just murdered all of them.
We're doing this?
I could do that everywhere. And I went to all the other casinos, and I had already killed everyone in Sal's, because... The fat guy wanted me to.
There's a way to get to Navarro from the Salvatore family.
Yeah.
Like they have a hook?
There's, like, one of their quests is that you go supervise a deal between them and the Enclave.
Huh.
And if you break up the deal and just shoot everyone, you can get in the vertibird and fly it to Navarro.
That's kind of incredible.
Yeah, well, just imagine getting off that vertibird.
Yeah. Having fought through Navarro, yes.
Yeah, as a person who killed everyone in Navarro this time, it's tough, man.
I mean, I've done it before. Yeah. Like, I didn't do it this time.
That's actually the encounter that made me start using the Ripper.
Which is a huge power spike at that point.
I'm doing like no damage, and I'm seeing these people across the map, and they're just shooting me with their plasma rifles again. So they just need to be dead. Yeah. It sucks that Sulik can't use a Ripper because he doesn't have the animation. But
yeah, it's like the sole reason.
I mean, I guess like all of the characters have like arbitrary restrictions on their weapons.
Yeah.
So like it's probably just a stylistic thing. Like Sulik knows how to use a hammer. He doesn't know how to use a robot knife.
Yeah. So I want to talk about how Fallout 2 is a type of sequel that we can't have anymore. Okay. In 2018, if something were like Fallout 2, like Fallout 2 is close enough to its original and enough of just like sort of an iterative product.
Just using the framework of the previous game.
That like majority of the time, that does not happen. What you get instead is iteration within one product. Like this would be a patch, right? And it wouldn't be like a whole new storyline.
Well, I think like you would get a sequel like Fallout 2, but it wouldn't like the engine would be different enough that you could never think for a second that there'd be a way to mod Fallout 1 into Fallout 2. Like, you know what I mean? Because, like, Fallout 1 and 2, like, very clearly, it's like, it's all the same menus, it all runs on the same, like, the same engine, the same map.
Except for the take-all button. Well, I want to advocate for the take-all button.
Okay, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about, like, little buttons here and there. Like, I'm talking about, like, the dialogue
the core of the game.
The same.
Yeah.
The save system is the same. The overworld map is the same with the buttons and the labels.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I just want to show love for the take-all button, that's all.
Okay, forgot what I was going to say. If we got a sequel like that today, it wouldn't be that same just toolbox, like, copy and paste it. I guess, like, the only example I can think of that is Fallout New Vegas, where that's, like, very obviously the same engine.
Yeah.
And uses all the same menus and a lot of the same models and things like that. But, you would get something like Fallout 2, but it would be as different from Fallout 1 as Fallout 4 is from Fallout 3.
Right, yeah. And the other thing is that Fallout 2 is good and right on the heels of Fallout 1, and most of the games that we get that are iterative like that now are not as good as their original. The second Middle-Earth game, second Middle-Earth Batman game, is, like, narratively everything that is wrong with a sequel, and that's the only thing I can think of in modern games that's, like, that sort of blueprint, where it is mostly the same game.
I was gonna say Shadowrun.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be like, but I'm not saying there aren't exceptions to that. I'm just saying,
this seems more like it's, that this tier, like, this double A tier of development just doesn't exist very much anymore.
Yeah.
It's either very small, or it's very, they're very, very large.
It's 12
companies.
People or 120.
Yeah.
Right?
Or 1,200 people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so I was just thinking about how I think if this were a more modern project that we would just see, like, a slow patching into sort of what Fallout 2 is rather than just a separate product, which is, I don't know what that is, but it is what it is. I don't know. I like Fallout 2 more than Fallout 1. I'll put that out there. Yeah.
Well, there's more to roll around in.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think Fallout 1 is a great game. But there's a lot more room to spread out and a lot less like proof of concept stuff, and they definitely learned a ton.
Well, and there's more like we talked about this in our Fallout 1 episode that like there's actually not that many towns in Fallout 1.
There's not a lot going on.
And they're not as big as you remember. Like you kind of have to go to everywhere at least once.
Mm-hmm.
There's tons of places in Fallout 2. I went to New Reno in this playthrough, but I barely did, and it was only to get something very specific. And that's just because I've played New Reno a ton of times. I've done that on a different playthrough. You can beat the game without ever going to New Reno. You can beat the city beat the game without ever going to Vault City or MODOK or Gecko
or
Redding. Like, basically, the only mandatory towns, as far as I can tell, are you have to go to San Francisco, you have to go to Navarro, you obviously have to go to Arroyo because you start there, and then like there's a fourth town you have to go to because there's a few different ways to get to Vault 13, so you have to go to one of the places that can lead to Vault 13.
So on that note, Mm-hmm. I fight Frank Corrigan, Gauss rifle to the eyes while Granite Squad takes the bullets.
Sure.
by the time Frank was in any condition to run, he was so crippled he couldn't in my game. But I fight through him, and then I get to the end, and I'm like, oh, right. Fallout ending, right? Like,
yeah.
It's gonna exposit at me.
Yeah, I was
gonna
ask you about what kind of towns you guys rolled through.
So, literally everything is a mess in my game, because I didn't really finish anywhere.
Okay.
Right? So, like, Nurino gets taken over by the Mordinos, and they just sort of spread. Mm. Vault City sort of takes over Gecko and the Gold... Redding? Redding's the gold place?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they end up taking both of those over. Vault 15 gets swallowed by the NCR. Like, eventually Vault City gets swallowed by the NCR. Like everything just sort of, like, propagates outward.
Yeah, yeah, the power players.
In the factional sense.
Just went unmolested
and
took over the wasteland.
Yeah, so, like, I got rid of the Enclave, but I didn't really solve a problem doing that, because everything else just kind of blew up from there. Like, the Xi expanded, the, like, yeah. It was interesting.
So, in my game, the Xi expanded, and the Vault City expanded enormously, and I had solved all of Vault City's problems to the point where they were, like, a power to rival the NCR and didn't get absorbed.
Oh, really?
Right. And they were, yeah, they did fine. So, and then
I only helped Vault City insofar as helping the citizens of Gecko, because, like, Vault City's fine. Like, they don't need my help.
They're fine and also fucked
up. Like, I only helped them in the sense that, like, I need to fix the Gecko power plant so the Vault City people don't kill the ghouls.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the outcome I got. And then the NCR, I got the NCR annexes Vault City.
Yeah.
Which is like, hey, good for NCR, and like, fuck Vault City.
Yeah, I just want to add that the Vault City that I helped turn into its own city state was also much more egalitarian and integrated with Gecko.
Oh, yeah?
It was the good ending on that part.
And they brokered that.
And they took over, like, Redding and MODOK and were cool to them, too, and, like, stopped having slaves. And yeah, and then when NCR showed up, they were like, you put a spy in here, we hate you, so fuck off. Right? Yeah, so.
Yeah.
I had, one of my endings was kind of bad, that kind of bummed me out. Because, like, I kind of put Klamath back together. Mm-hmm. Like, I took out Metzger, and I fixed things up. And then, like, I think one of the Nurino families just rolled in and fucked it up. And,
yeah.
The Den ending was good, and then when the title card came for Nurino fucked up my shit.
Yeah.
Because I didn't do anything with Nurino.
Yeah, the Mordino family was just like, yo.
The Nurino ending for me was that the Wright family grew to prominence because all the other families were dead.
Yeah.
But then about a generation after that, they sort of were petering out because they couldn't make booze anymore because I broke all their stills. And then my son just took over all of New Reno.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, yeah. If you leave a child in one of the bishop women,
yeah,
your son always figures into the epilogue there.
Yeah.
But
New Reno didn't, like, do anything to any other towns, because all the families were dead.
As far as I can tell, the Xi always do great.
Yeah.
Like, unless you kill them all.
Yeah.
Because, like...
Oh, I wiped out the Hobolidus.
Oh, well, come on. Like, how do you not, right? Mm. Like, you gotta fuel that tanker somehow. The tanker ain't gonna fuel itself.
The Xi liked me enough, so I went and did it with their computer.
So I got into the computer, and I couldn't get it to transfer the fuel, so...
Yeah.
I just went and rolled through.
There's a lot of clicks deep.
Yeah.
A lot of clicks.
Yeah,
to you.
I spent a while banging on the Emperor.
12 clicks later. Oh, cool, fuel. Nice. Meanwhile, I'm like reading all this expository shit. I'm like, this is fucking cool. And then it's like, oh yeah, fuel. Yeah, do that thing. Put it on the tanker. Like,
this is kind of an aside, but did you ever run into the Xi in New California yet?
No, I didn't get very far into it. I'm going to let that game sit because the release they had at the end of October was the beta release, and the official release isn't until December.
Okay.
And I found it to be pretty glitchy and weird.
Yeah.
So I'm going to...
Hopefully it's cleaned up.
I'm going to let them do that 1.0 release and give it another crack. I never got to the Xi in that, and I'm very excited to see them. I like those
guys. They're a cool faction. I'd never really dealt with them because I'd gotten to San Francisco and stuff.
And they're very insular, so like they don't interact with any of the other factions
in
the game.
They are there.
Yeah.
That is what they are doing.
They sold me power armor.
Yeah.
Nice.
Man, San Francisco is a hell of a town, you know? There's two merchants that have a ton of high-end tech to sell in the front of town.
So I, like, never found the right merchants, apparently.
Oh, really?
The when I had a Gauss rifle and a Gauss pistol, it's because they were in the oil rig and I found them.
Oh, so they'll sell you Gauss gear and power armor and stuff like that.
Yeah, I saved money all game so I could buy Gauss weapons from them.
And, like, caseless ammunition. Yeah. And then there's also a merchant on the tanker.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty all right.
And, like, San Francisco is, even though it's only a few screens, it is very big. Mm-hmm. There is a lot going on in San Francisco, especially coming from Fallout 1, right?
Well, like, it's that thing we were talking about with the hub, where, like, in the hub there's a lot of, like, space that's not there for your protagonist's benefit. Content,
yeah.
You know, like, it's people living their lives, and so, like, a lot of San Francisco is that, like...
Most of it.
Yeah, there's only, like, a handful of quest lines. Right. It's not, like, a super deep...
Right, so I probably just talked to the wrong people, right?
Merchant, Dragon, Lopan, and then that whole screen is garbage.
Yeah.
And then... The Emperor's Palace, the Hobologist, and the Tanker. And those actually...
That Brotherhood Bunker's mad boring.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I forgot. The Brotherhood Bunker's there.
Oh, but you can talk to the computer. Did you ever talk to him in there?
I don't think I did that.
Oh, he's lonely.
No. I like that when you give the vertebrate plans to the Brotherhood, they're like, cool, I'll copy these.
Yeah.
So I was like, cool, I'm double dipping. Ran over to the Xi and gave them the vertebrate plans.
Yeah. It super sucks if you give them to the Xi first. They're like, thanks.
And yep. But yeah, no, that's why I was like, because I was expecting it to be one or the other. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, oh yeah, here's your copy. And I'm like,
The actual one or the other is between the Xi and some other, it's like the evil, if you're evil, you can do it, give it to the Hobologist, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Fuck those guys. What the fuck are they going to do with it? They have a rocket plane that's going to blow up on that fucking runway.
On that bridge.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, sure.
Until I was like reading a thing about the Hobologist, because I was like, what are these dudes about? And it's like, oh yeah, they hang out at the Golden Gate Bridge, and I walk back into the screen, I'm like, oh yeah, that's like a support pylon for, okay, duh. Like, that's why this is an 8-lane road with a space plane on it.
Oh man, you know what's a funny thing I found in this game? So you know how when we did Fallout 1, we were talking about, like, all these, like, arcane uses for items you can have in your inventory? I found an arcane use for an item I had never used in, like, the 20 years.
Are we talking about, like, steal a grenade into someone's inventory, like, that kind of thing?
I was talking more, like, stuff like the rope.
Okay, yeah.
If you bring up the, like, use item on cursor, okay. If you have high strength, you can use a crowbar to force open locked things.
Sick.
Because when I...
Because there's all these specific tools in that game.
Yeah, all the tools are usable, even though they don't necessarily seem like it.
But in, like, an intuitive way that if you were to try it,
yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah, if you were of the inclination that I should try and use these tools.
So use the crowbar with high strength when the lock is jammed? Is that basically?
Or when you suck at lockpicking. Like, yeah. When I had to get the fob from the base commander at Navarro, mm-hmm. I just couldn't open his lockers.
Mm-hmm.
My lockpicking just wasn't there. And I was like, fuck it, man. Like,
I pulled it off his corpse. Like...
Well, no, I mean, this wasn't to get the fob. Yeah. This was just like, no, what's in these lockers?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I approached Arroyo completely wrong, apparently. Like, I was like, all right, we're gonna go fight the Enclave now. And, like, that was a rough fight. Yeah. I definitely loaded it a few times. I got through it. Like, I was okay enough to get what I needed out of the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went upstairs and was like, nah, I can't do this right now. And I left. but then you guys were like, you can just walk in and talk to him if you don't bring anyone. I'm like, oh, okay. Like,
whoops. Yeah, you get free access to that base. It's like actually like
a little... Well, and that's how I did the oil rig.
A little ridiculous.
Was like, even. I did the same thing. I like cleared out one floor and I'm like, wait a minute. And I like walked down into it. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so I did the rest of the oil rig that way, but that meant that everyone was trapped on the second floor and I couldn't get back to the detainment level.
Okay.
While fighting Frank.
Sure.
That's so like everyone was downstairs. Or on the boat already, depending. I also didn't have any followers when I got off the boat at the dock, so presumably they were locked downstairs and are dead?
Yeah. That's
what that means. That's correct. Which probably has a lot to do with why my ending was a hellscape. Is because, like, none of the people I had influenced...
The followers don't... The followers don't really figure into the epilogue. Like, Suluk doesn't get an epilogue, which is kind of a bummer.
That is a bummer. Suluk is great.
Myron gets stabbed.
Yeah, Myron gets an epilogue.
I didn't even run into Myron.
Well, you have to get in deep with the Mordinos.
That makes sense.
Each of the Nereno families has, like, a cool thing.
Okay.
Where if you get in deep with them, they give you, like, a cool thing. So, okay. Like, if you get in deep with the Wrights, they'll tell you how to get to the Sierra Army Depot. And that's, like, a cool little dungeon where there's, like, a cool follower, and there's a bunch of stuff you can fuck around with and a lot of weapons.
Okay.
If you get in deep with... the bishops, you can fuck with the fuck with Vault City. Like, they're, because...
Right, because there's the whole...
Mrs. Bishop is from Vault City.
Okay, and the dude tells you to take a case to them.
Yeah. Like... And so there's, like, some political intrigue there. The Mordinos are the ones making Jet, which is, like, why in, like, all our epilogues, the Mordinos, like, fucking rolled all over the wasteland, because Jet's just taken over.
If you don't stop the flow of Jet, it just does.
And so that's where you can get Myron, the follower, because he's the inventor of Jet.
Yeah.
Jet was invented in Fallout 2, listeners.
Yeah.
It was made out of poop.
Yeah, and then Salvatore is the one that can get you onto the vertibird.
Like, oh, okay.
If you do that.
Right.
Also, he sets you up with the weapon merchant in town and gets you a discount, which is cool.
I feel like my merchants weren't regenerating their gear.
Oh, yeah?
So by the end of the game, like, my trunk is full of guns, I am full of guns, all my followers are full of guns.
My trunk was always full of shit.
Yep.
Like, because, like, I would go to, like, every merchant, take all their money,
yep,
and then, like, at a certain point, you have to start just using other items as currency.
Yep.
Yeah, like, any meds you have.
Yeah, well, it's like, all meds, all money. That's like
step
first
one.
Order of business. And then it's like, okay, I guess I'm going to start collecting power armors in my trunk.
I'm going to take all your grenades and ammunition I might use.
Yeah, and so, like, I had this trunk that was always just, like, full of, like, random-ass shotguns and submachine guns. And
I think you guys were talking about melee being hard mid-game. I think mid-game in general, combat-wise, is a weird thing in that game.
Yeah, but also, melee has very few steps up in power.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of parts where melee lags behind guns in, like, a really big way.
That makes sense.
Like, you can't get a super sledge until you probably go to San Francisco. There's some
I didn't
of them
run into one until
scattered
on
around
there.
The game, but they're kind of hard to find. So, like, you're gonna be running just, like, a sledge or something simple like that.
It's like a guns character in this game. Starting point is a pipe rifle or a 10 mil.
Yeah.
Right. And then the starting point for a melee is the spear, which the spear's great. And then you get a deagle, and we get nothing.
We get the sharp spear.
Yeah. Plus one damage.
Yeah.
And then when you get, like, a 14 millimeter pistol, we get nothing.
Yeah. then I get a hunting rifle, and you still have a spear.
I've got nothing.
And then you get panker jackhammers, and you get miniguns, and you get, and it's like, okay, I got the one sledge upgrade. I got the good sledge. That's it. Oh, Ripper. There's Ripper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I think my character over the course of the game used spear, sharp spear, sledge, super sledge.
Yep.
And that was it. So, like, the granularity is really big on the...
I was very picky about damage ranges on guns, but there were definitely options.
Yeah, there's a
I
lot
used
of stuff.
The Louisville Slugger that Mrs. Wright gives you for breaking the stills
for
a very long time. That thing is amazing.
Cool.
So...
I only got in with the Wrights once playing this game, like, in all my years playing Fallout, and it was specifically because I found out that's how you get into the Sierra Army Depot, and I was like, okay, well, let's do that, because I want to see this location I've never seen before.
Yeah.
Because it's
hidden. That's the thing that's cool about Fallout 2 compared to Fallout 1, is there's so much in the game you can absolutely miss giant pieces of it, and I like that, right? Like, I like that I finished the game the way I did. But I also might come back to it at some point because I know there's a lot more in there, and that's great. Like, yeah. And that each of those places, like, when I would clear out a town, I'd have, like, 8 missions done, right? Like, that each of those places has, like, a deep through line is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, like in Klamath, you can, like, fucking open an orphanage for all the kids. You know the kids that steal your shit?
Yeah, I did that.
Yeah, the way you're supposed to get rid of them is you get them a home instead of killing them.
Yep.
And shit like that. Like,
and that wasn't possible before Resto.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't really figure out if there's any good ending for Klamath, like, if there's anything you can do.
If you open the orphanage and kill Metzger, that's about as good as you can
get. Well, not the den, Klamath.
Oh, Klamath.
The gecko trapping town, like...
It's fine.
Yeah, this is...
Klamath is fine.
They're hunting geckos.
You kill those two assholes who were fucking with Tor.
The Dentons.
Yeah, and then you're good.
Yeah, I didn't help Tor this time.
Oh, I farmed them for XP. Hard.
I wanted to get rolling, so I didn't really want to fuck around with Klamath. Like, fuck you, Klamath. Like, I've been here, like, a million times.
Yeah. if you take out King Rat and you take out the Dentons, you're good.
Yeah. Like, replaying the beginning of that game wouldn't have been so bad if I'd chosen it. But it was literally, like, corrupted saves and reinstalls, and, yeah, it was bad.
I think the oil rig is, like, a really perplexingly designed piece of, like, environment. Like it's another one of those areas where there's a ton of stuff in there that's just to show you it's there, right?
It's to justify the Enclave's existence.
Yeah, like, yeah.
And you got to ask yourself when you look at it, like, what was the expectation of how the player would tackle this? Yeah. Were there multiple ways that they expected you to do this, or was it all just talking?
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's really just, like, release the...
I can't imagine pushing through it combat-wise. I can't. The electrified rooms on turn-based would suck. Like, the... Like,
you know the thing about that, right?
No.
If you do a science check on the first console, you can open all the doors.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's just not a thing.
Okay.
And like, I think you'll still take like a shock when you run through the whole thing.
Right.
But like,
that makes sense though.
I remembered that puzzle room and I was like, all right, I need to make sure, like, I like science and repair weren't my tag skills, but it's like, I need to make sure my science and repair
are high enough.
Cause I knew that there was like an option that you can like fuck with it and like it stops being a problem.
Yeah.
Because like, I remember just toiling.
So that room is why I ended up doing the rest of the base alone, is cause I didn't want all my followers just like dying.
Sure.
Right.
Did you get the second Gek?
Yeah.
And the advanced Mark II?
Yep.
Yeah.
I had that on. Man, Horga barely did damage to me with that shit on.
Yeah,
it was rad. Stuff. Like, the difference between those percentages on the 1 and 2 was a big help.
Yeah, yeah. It's got good resistances on it. I love the way in the oil rig, the loot in all the lockers very clearly telegraphs, like, yeah, like, this is the end of the game.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's just...
Here's all the stuff you might have missed.
Well, just, like, there's Gauss rifles everywhere, because it makes sense for the Enclave to have Gauss rifles everywhere, but it's not, like, game-breaking that you can, like, loot, like, 14 Gauss rifles on the oil rig.
Also, if you fight those dudes, none of them have guns.
Who?
The guys in the break rooms.
Oh, okay.
None of them have guns, because they're not... They're on break. Like...
So like, back to the other, like, it's not like a, there's no, like, really robust and interesting multi-dimensional solutions to the oil rig. It's
no.
Like, you let your tribe out, you release the FEV, and you go fight Frank Horrigan. And, like, you can go talk to Dick Richardson, and, like, he's got some cool, like, world-buildy type dialogue you can have with him. And there's, like, some of that talking to all the various people.
Right.
But it's all pretty...
Yeah.
It's all pretty
chill. Do the
FEV,
start the bomb, blow up the generator, leave.
Yeah. Like. It's like, on this playthrough, I sort of realized it's like, it's kind of an undercooked area.
It makes sense though, right? Like, it's the end of the game. It's probably the last thing that was developed. Like,
it strikes me as a less severe, but still on the same sort of wavelength as the difference between, I've been playing Deus Ex. What is this boss fight sequence? Why is it 100% different from the rest of the game? I think Owen has a very good point. This area feels different than the rest of the game.
I think part of it might be is, like, I don't feel this way about the Master's Lair or the military base in Fallout 1. And even though those are, like, very like, military base, there's really only, like, two ways to go about things there. Like, you can like, roll in and fuck it all up, or you can, what, join the Master's Army?
Right.
And I think, like, maybe you can talk your way up to the control room and blow it up that way. So, like, three. Like, and whatever. And, like, the Master's Lair is, like, kind of the same way. You can either talk the Master out of it, or you can fight the Master out of it.
Or you can talk your way into the room and fight the Master.
Well, sure. But, like, my point is, though, like, the oil rig is so detailed. You know, like,
there's all these things in there that aren't used anywhere else. There's all these, like...
Yeah, yeah, there's sprites there you don't see anywhere else. There's people there. There's rooms. There's all sorts of containers. Where's, like...
Those big brown robots you won't see unless you go to Sierra.
There's another place where you can find them. Okay. You know where you go rescue Smiley?
Oh, if you go down below.
If you go back there with an electronic lockpick, you can open that elevator, and there's those fucking rocket launcher robots in there. And that shit's rough. Yeah, they're in the Sierra Army Depot, and they might be in the EPA as well.
That makes sense. There was something about robots in that table of contents.
Yeah. But, like, it feels so detailed, whereas, like, the Master's Lair, it's like, whatever, it's just another vault. So it has all the same floors a vault does, and then the Master. And then, like, the military base is like, all right, whatever, this is just a base full of mutants. So, like, I'm just going to shoot it up. But, like, when you come to the Enclave oil rig, like, it feels like there should be this huge possibility space there. And there really isn't. I found that, like, sort of surprising on this playthrough, because I actually very much wanted to tease it and, like, poke at it and pull things
Hitman
out.
Hitman style.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons I was...
And it's a testament to this game that you feel like you should be able to do that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that you feel like those options should be there.
Did you guys go up to the vertebrate pad on the roof?
Yep.
I think there's a way to get here on a vertibird from Navarro. I think there's a way to talk your way into a vertibird.
That makes sense.
That you don't have to do the tanker, but I couldn't suss it out, so I just did what I knew. The oil rig is like specifically why I was so insistent that you finish this.
Yeah, game, no, like it's a cool episode, space.
I really wanted to talk about the oil rig.
I wanted to finish.
I think it's a very curious piece of design in that game.
I like the Vault 13 is just full of Deathclaw.
Yeah,
I thought that was neat.
I'm really sad because the ending for Vault 13 is bugged in the release version of Fallout, where no matter what you do, it says the Deathclaw died and it's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Restoration Project, they fix it, so that's not a guaranteed ending. However, I did take long enough for Frank Horgan to come kill all the Deathclaws anyway. and so I was really bummed that in my epilogue to see that slide, because it was one I actually kind of meant to remedy.
In my epilogue, the Deathclaws became sort of citizens of the NCR.
Yeah, that's kind of what happened to mine. Yeah,
because the squatters agreed to join, and then they also found out about Vault 13. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, they went over the Deathclaws, and they're like, hey, you guys chill with being here? And they're like, yeah. Cool. All right.
I like that one dude who lives in Vault 13 with the Deathclaw, the Doctor.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, yeah, they're totally cool. It's fine.
I like his story, too. Yeah. He's just, like, out in the wasteland, and, like, Deathclaws crept up on him. Yeah. And like, you're coming with us.
Yeah. We think you're a doctor. Come here.
Yeah.
Did you guys talk to the vice president at all?
The United States or of the NCR?
Of the United States.
I don't think he
seemed like a weird clone dude. Like, his answers to my questions didn't seem like proper grammatical responses to the things I was saying. Right? Like, he was just sort of like, I would ask him a question and he would say, well, golly gee, you know, like stuff like he wasn't really listening to what I was saying in a way that made me feel like, are you a fucking like lobotomized clone or like what is going on?
Is that supposed to be like a hit on whoever Nixon's VP was? Because Dick Richardson, come on.
Spiro
Agnew.
Yeah.
Dick Richardson makes I forget what it is because it's like 90s politics, so like I was a kid when this is happening.
He makes the same
typo that I think like Dan Quayle did.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Or something like that.
Yeah,
like he misspells potatoes or something when he speaks.
That makes sense.
Well,
yeah, and like Dick Richardson himself has a very like Bush visual, like
yeah, kind of
George Senior visual.
He reminds me of John McCain.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Well, shit, man.
Fallout 2's pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's a great game. Oh, man, that car. First time I switched on my car, it's got that car music. Booted up, I closed my eyes and leaned back in the seat. And just drank it in. Like, it feels like freedom. The first
sound
time you take
it out. Is very good.
Yeah.
Did you guys get all the different car modifications?
Yes.
Like, the blower and the...
So... I had all of them, but I did not get them installed.
I went to New Reno, and my car was stolen. And I went to the chop shop, and they were like, hey, man, we got this new car you can buy. And it's got all these features, and you can pay a lot of money for them all. I was like, hell yeah, man. Here's, like, fucking 10,000 caps or whatever. And they're like, great. And it's like, in the dialogue box at the bottom, it says, like, oh, you get, like, this much experience for solving this conflict nonviolently. And it's like, all right, let's roll, buddy. Like, you know, Sula, get your hammer. We're taking these boys out.
We rolled in, and it was like, hey, what's the deal with that car over there? And he's like, oh, we're selling it to Mr. Bishop. And I was like, is that right? I work for Mr. Bishop. Give me that car. And he goes, well, I just installed a bunch of stuff. I'm losing money. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm with Mr. Bishop. Give me the car.
It's funny how much you can do that in this game. Yeah. Like,
and then he's like,
people, there's no way for them to check.
He gives me the car, and then I go, okay, now give me all the money and ammo you have. And then I take that, and I'm like, over my car trunk, put it in. Okay, bye.
I did that you're super not with Mr. Bishop, right?
No.
Like,
I did no, that... and then I hit that dude with a super cattle prod.
So yeah. I did that with Sulik's sister, too, because, like, I did that quest super early in the game. Mm. Like, I did it, like, right after I got Sulik. Because, like, Sulik, we're getting this shit squared away pronto. Like, we're making years
that
of wrongs.
Fight is hard. Yeah.
Yeah, it's super hard. But you can also just roll up there and be like, hey, I'm with Metzger. He needs some girls for tonight. And they're like, oh shit, Metzger? And so you just go in the back and it's like, and like Sula goes and talks to his sister and like you just walk out the back door with her.
Todd Howard.
You guys were like, Vic is good.
He is.
I don't believe you.
He is good.
He consistently shot everyone in my party because he doesn't know how to fucking chill. He consistently did single-digit damage no matter what I gave him.
So he needs to get to his last level up.
Yeah, you need to keep him for a long time.
I had him the whole time.
And you need to have his... All right, I should ask this question. What level were you when the game was over?
21.
I was 24?
Yeah, I was 28. So, okay. Yeah.
So there's a breakpoint I missed somewhere?
Yeah, you didn't level them up enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
I noticed them leveling.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, that's cool that you say something.
Well, they'll say a thing. And
you're getting better at what you're doing.
Yeah, so he needs it, when he hits his last one, he gets very, very good.
Okay.
I've not gotten him to that point personally.
Yeah, but like...
But I've seen people use him, and it's impressive.
I mean, he killed Goris in one hit. What can I say?
Yeah. Oh, man, my Vic died so horribly. I went to the military base from Fallout 1, and we went up the elevator... And I was like, I just want to go to the top because you can get a Gauss pistol from the guy at the very
top. Wait, how'd you get in there?
You have to... I'll show it to you. It's going to make you mad.
Okay.
It's really dumb.
What area are we talking about?
The military base.
The Mariposa military base.
Oh, yeah, it's really funny.
And so we got this like train of mutants following us because I'm just running to the next elevator. Yeah! And I go up there and I realize... Like,
I love that that's a thing in Fallout 1 and 2, by the way. That you can just run. Like.
So we go up the elevator and I can't beat the guy that's up there. To get his gospel stolen, I tried like a bunch of times because he's almost like Death Claws. It's crazy.
Okay.
What?
Yeah.
Oh wow! I didn't do that fight.
Yeah, he has like mutants. He keeps in these slime pools near him.
I did not do that fight.
When the fight starts, he like calls them out, and they come out and fight you, and it sucks. And so I realized like we just can't do this fight. I'm gonna go back down this elevator. All the mutants are waiting for me at the door, and so it was like I saved and loaded and saved and loaded, like trying to fight my way out, and like. The best outcome I could come up with is Cassidy lives, I live, and Sulik lives. Lenny dies.
Sorry, Lenny. Sorry, Vic.
And Lenny died. And it was like, man, I was hoping to really kick the tires on Vic this time. But
Lenny lived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's pretty worthless.
He's quietly retired somewhere in... Somewhere.
You just left him somewhere.
I was like, yeah, you... Mark... Broken Hills. He's in Broken Hills. This is like, you, Marcus, get in here.
Oh, yeah, one of the bad things that happened was I never went to Broken Hills this time.
Oh, yeah, no, Broken Hills
and
got
so
fucked.
Broken Hills just got destroyed.
Yeah. They never once got mentioned in my epilogue. Mm.
They were like, yeah, it ran out of uranium and evaporated.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
For me, it was the tension boiled over, the racial tension, and they just killed each other.
So. Yeah, so, like, I'd done enough good that the in there that, like, the mutants lived, and everyone just left because the town dried up. And the NCR was cool with mutants.
Okay.
So.
You guys good?
I'm good.
Todd Howard.
Nope.
Zero Todd Howard.
Zero Todd Howards. Brandon Chung.
Should we explain what we're doing?
No, not yet. We're going to do it at the end.
Brandon Chung,
I'd give it like a one or two.
Yeah, like I'm good
with... It's a pretty zany one.
I'm good with
there.
One.
Was that the thing he was talking about with the, in the background, there's weird stuff? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Two.
Two?
Okay. Two. Nina Freeman.
Zero Nina Freemans.
Yeah, I did not feel any feelings. Other than anger. Simon Bickland.
Ooh.
Three.
Three? I can go with a three.
I could go to a four if you wanted to, but I'm good with three.
No, I think three's warranted.
There's, if you ever read the Fallout Bible, there's, like, a really specific, like, sort of discussion of, like, which guns exist in this world and which ones don't. And it's like, so, like, the M16 is not...
By the way, I love, like, the wood furniture M16 model. Sprite.
So, actually, this is about that. The M16's not supposed to be in the game.
Really?
Yeah, that's part of their diverged timeline from ours.
Okay.
But, like...
William Stoner never made an M16?
Yeah, but, like, the fucking Desert Eagle's still in this fucking game for some reason.
Because Israel.
Desert Eagles are red.
Yeah, yeah. Because
Israel.
This is what I was trying to say about the Simon Vicklund Award here is, like, yeah, but this fucking Desert Eagle's
well,
this
yeah, I think
game.
The argument from last time on Fallout 1 still holds true. Like, katanas are red, dude. Yeah.
There's actually wakizashis in this game.
Yeah. Yo, so I got a Bozar and I thought it was a small gun and that hilarity ensued.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it single fire now?
Nope.
Did they didn't fix it? That's funny.
Jeff Bezos. Or, sorry, J.E. Sawyer.
J.E. Sawyer? J.E. Sawyer is in the credits of this game.
Yeah.
So five?
Is that a five?
Yeah, I'd give it a five. Yeah.
I mean, like, if he's made the game, is that an automatic five?
He was like a community
Black Isle.
He was like a beginner at Black Isle at the time, so he's like technically in the credits. And then he also made the sequel to this game, so like yeah, five.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Bezos.
Zero.
Yeah.
I don't have any.
Yeah.
Taron Adams.
none.
None. It's not the right
people kind live underground. Of love. Like it's the same.
Thing yeah, from it's Fall not the one. Right kind of love.
Yeah,
Jake Solomon.
I give this like a 2 or 3.
I'm at 1.
Yeah.
It's up to you, Keenan.
It's a, like it's a 90s tactical there's
good
combat.
Two. There's good character attachment too.
There's a lot of like drama that can come out of like critical misses.
Weird dumb shit.
You know, like your follower's like fucking self-destructing, you know, and shit like that. Yeah,
all right. I'm not changing my number.
All right.
It's still a 2. I voted 2.
Cardboard computers.
None.
Does this game receive the Memorial Brown or the
Moira Brown.
Memorial Brown Award?
Yeah, absolutely.
The Moira Brown Memorial Award for letting NPCs die and us not experiencing content. Yeah, this game is 100% unafraid to let the player not experience content.
You can destroy or skip almost the entire game.
You can grab every follower and use them like paper towels.
Yeah. Like, you can skip whole towns, you can kill everyone in town and still play, like, and miss huge quest lines, or, like, if you rolled into San Francisco, didn't talk to anybody, and killed all of the Shi, you'd never learn about the Emperor and the nuclear submarine.
Yeah.
Would
you even be able to finish the game? Wouldn't the submarine just blow your shit up?
No, because you...
Does the transponder...
Yeah, the transponder, keeps
does
it.
Both.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you'd be able to get the oil from the Hobologists, even if you couldn't access the Emperor.
Okay. I mean, by that time, your karma would be so low anyway.
Yeah.
It'd be just fine. Hey, so... I kind of just did that, but what just happened? Anybody want to feel that?
The Not Real Game Awards just happened.
All right.
The Not Real Game Awards are a mood board of games peoples.
It's my Twitteris board.
Yeah. they're people who work in the games industry that evoke certain aesthetics.
Yeah. Like, their creations will have the same themes.
If you're curious about why this game got so many J.E. Sawyers and not so many Jeff Bezoses, go look up these people, look up their resumes, like...
Or listen to another episode.
Yeah, or listen to another episode, yeah.
Because that'll give you a better idea of what's going on.
We're being lazy about this today. Deal with it.
Where can they find us?
If you want to email us game codes, corrections, and manifestos, you can contact us at badplaystyle@gmail.com. Hey, I just leveled up in Fallout.
Yeah, that's Stannin. We're also at Bad Playstyle on Twitter.
Please harass our Twitter.
Yeah.
Get
it.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Scream epithets at our Twitter, please.
Whoa. No.
Yep.
I will report them.
Nope.
To Jack. And Jack will...
I will report.
Take swift action.
I am a Twitter reporter. It happens.
Mm-hmm. And where can they find our Twitch stream, Keenan?
There's a discussion. I stream on twitch.tv/savoryscrimp, which is shrimp with a C instead of an H.
Why don't you stream us playing Divinity?
I was going to say, there's some stuff we could stream on my channel.
Yeah.
There's some stuff, because you talked about a thing we could probably stream or record at minimum.
Yeah. What was that?
The X.
Oh, the XX. X is going to give it to you. Okay. you receive a chicken hat, which brings you up to a total of 1 point.
1 point tiebreaker.
1 point tiebreaker. And I was going to, this episode, suggest that we do away with the chicken hat if no one receives any points this season, but that is not a thing anymore. So,
Maybe that's the standing goal of the chicken hat.
Maybe. Okay.
If no points, remove chicken hat.
Yeah, if we can.
Or maybe remove it for a season.
If we can go for an entire decapod, then I think. Yeah.
Okay. Quantum.
Quadrum?
Quadrum. That's
what it was. No, don't use that one.
I didn't mean to do that. That was an accident.
Quadrum.
What are we playing next week? Oh, that's a great question, Matt. We're playing Firewatch, which I totally forgot that I made that decision. Right before we recorded, I turned to Owen and I said, hey, whose pick is it? And he said, it's yours. You already picked Firewatch.
Yeah, like, you discussed that in a chat, and we were like, cool. None of us even, like, blinked at it, because Firewatch.
So, my brain is melting out of my ears right now, This is the part of the show where the most important thing in the entire world happens. Owen tells us who Sam Fisher fights and if he thinks
what?
He wins.
Sam Fisher's been given a mission to destroy the Enclave while we can save his village.
Okay.
he absolutely succeeds.
Yo, that dude's sneak score.
Like, I mean, we were talking about how the Chosen One or the Vault Dweller are essentially just worse versions of Sam Fisher already, yeah, right? Yeah. So,
Like, he doesn't even, like, walk through the corridors, you know? This is, like, silenced bullets coming out of ventilation
ducts. Yeah, no, he has climbed up the oil rig. Yeah.
The 90s are utterly unequipped to think about that kind of combat.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's like, yeah, you give them a better gun, they do better, right? No consideration made for tactics whatsoever.
They didn't even conceptualize press X to kill the Secretary of Defense.
No.
They didn't.
No.
Oh, how'd you guys kill the president? I assume you killed the president.
Yeah, he found some dynamite in his pocket.
Nice.
Or no, actually, he didn't. I couldn't get the steel check right, so I went sneak and shot him in the eyes twice, and he died, no combat ensued.
Yeah, if you kill him in one turn...
So I was like, fuck this.
I'm not really sure what happened to the president, but, when I walked in and I talked to him, at one point, he looked really sick, so I gave him 14 stupor Simpacks, and then I went and did some other stuff, and I came back later and he was dead, so I guess he was really sick, but I looted his body.
14 Simpacks couldn't fix it?
No, 14 Simpacks couldn't do it. 14 super Sims couldn't do it.
He really needed a trauma pack or something.
Yeah. Really needed something else, yeah.
Yeah, man, that's a way you can kill him, in case you couldn't tell through our sarcasm.
Yeah,
yeah, I like that there's a lot of options.
Thanks for listening, friends.
Yeah, have a good one.
Firewatch.
Jet's made out of poop.